Welcome to Unpacking the Digital Shelf, where we explore brand manufacturing in the digital age.
Hey everyone, Peter Crosby here from the Digital Shelf Institute. Thomas Parkinson, co-founder of Peapod, Item Master, and Dean of Grocery E-commerce and Digital Experiences, is now putting his 30 years of experience into creating Sifter.shop, what he calls a nutrition as a service platform that helps consumers find, explore, and buy products that fit their personalized dietary needs. And in an age where sustainability and nutrition also happen to drive better margins, Rob and I thought it was a great time to chat with Thomas about his career putting the E in front of things in grocery and what Sifter is all about. Thomas, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. You have such a history and you've driven so much of the grocery industry into its new age. And so we've been looking forward so much to this conversation.
Well, thank you, Peter, and also Rob for inviting me. It has been a long journey. I was in e-commerce for 31 years, starting in 1989. Wow. So yes, I went through a lot.
I think you were the one that put the E in front of commerce.
Well, probably, yeah. I mean, if you were dialing into our modem rack, not on the internet.
Oh man, that's another podcast altogether.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I wanted to kick this off with that timeline in mind, just thinking about the big sweeping story arc of the last few decades. And you co-founded Peapod way back when, and Webvan famously in the same era crashed and burned and did not make it out of the dot-com bust, but Peapod did, as part of Ahold, and it's still going even today. And so I'm curious with Peapod and Instacart coming up and now all of these instant commerce folks and everything, what are the biggest changes in online grocery that have just surprised you in the last few decades since you've been doing this?
Sure. Well, that's a great question, Rob. So we started in 1989 and, we built all our own software. You had to get the disk and put it in your computer and dial into our modem rack. And our first place that we shopped was with Jewel Foods in Chicago, Evanston, Illinois, actually. So we were actually shopping in the store, picking the groceries, loading them up in cars of our drivers at just people's cars, and they would be driving them around the neighborhood. And as the company matured, we got a better handle on the economics and realized this is not really a profitable model. And so we realized that we probably needed to move to warehouses, centralized fulfillment, and using trucks with drivers. And what we had to do there, though, was we had to go to next day delivery versus we were offering same day and next day. But by only offering next day delivery, it meant you could batch all the orders up into single routes, and that instantly made us profitable. So that was going really, really well. We were building warehouses. We were working with Stop and Shop in Boston. We were actually using the top floors of their stores to create mini warehouses. We called them ware rooms. Then as that was moving along, new companies came in that were actually shopping back in store and they were doing same day delivery while we were now doing next day delivery. So suddenly there was a competitive edge on Peapod with the new company. So like Instacart was doing same day delivery. And so that gave a better service model, but we knew that for us, it wasn't profitable. And so we had to pivot to doing same day, but then, that made it unprofitable for Peapod at the time. But because we had the advantage of picking in the ware rooms and stores, we actually were closer to the customer. So we were able to do kind of a hybrid of sort of batch and also same day delivery, et cetera. But I'd say the biggest shift has been moving to the same day. And now it's like 30 minutes that people can get their groceries. And I can tell you that I just know that that's not a profitable model. And what the smarter companies are doing now, though, is they're moving more into becoming media companies where they can sell. They've got all these customers. Now they can sell ads to the CPG companies, et cetera, who are trying to reach those customers. So there is, with that media, I think some of them are going to do quite well. But that kind of gives you sort of landscape change. And it all came down to the logistics and profitability. That was always the challenge for Peapod.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's of the newer companies, you've got folks like GoPuff who have, you know, pretty decent unit economics, but it's due to the fact that they're doing a warehousing model. So they don't have to worry about the picking costs and whatnot. The picking costs are just brutal in this game. And then you've got Instacart, which might have been built at, you know, the best possible moment in corporate finance history, given their cost basis, because money's been so cheap the last decade. And just the moment that interest rates are rising, they're able to make money on retail media. It's just so interesting that the Peapod model, you were able to make profitable long before any of these other players actually came on the horizon, and were able to do it for such a long time. I just think that's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, it's actually the Instacart story is similar to the Amazon story, where you were able to use that cheap money in order to grow your company. And then suddenly you're a media. So I think, you know, that's the brilliant part there. And then companies like GoPuff, I mean, you got to find your margin somewhere, right? So with GoPuff, they have a lot of private label, and, you know, so they're making higher margins on the actual products that they're selling. So different models, and I respect them all, and it's all hard work, I can tell you that. So the next company that I'll start, which I started, won't be delivering any physical goods.
You've learned your lesson, Thomas. Is that what's happening? Yeah. We'll definitely get to that one in a minute. But I did, before I left kind of the industry talk, I did want to just check in with you. One, you know, Rob was just talking about sort of the new economic era that we're entering right now, and e-commerce sort of starting to come back to some state of whatever normal is, but in a different environment of inflation and supply chain problems and all of that, and changing valuations as a result of that. And I was just wondering, when you look out at the landscape of what's happening right now, you know, what do you think are the things that will last, that we'll see through this maybe next bumpy period, because they're good ideas that maybe can be done, that mm-hmm. can be sustainable. Does that make sense?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think e-commerce and is not going away for grocery. And so, you know, the COVID pandemic was almost like the best marketing thing that could ever happen. That just, you know, companies, they doubled in sales. You know, before that, it was like 15% growth, 20% growth, you know, year over year, but suddenly it was this massive growth. So I don't think consumers, I think they're happy to go back to the store, but I also think they're going to continue using e-commerce. So that's not going away. So what does that really mean? It means that retailers have to offer it. And, you know, it may be a loss leader for them, but they're going to have to make up for it somewhere else. But it's basically table stakes now for retail.
Yeah.
And some retailers have chosen to outsource it 100% to third parties, and others have, you know, brought it 100% internally. So if you take a company that my old company, Peapod, it's owned by Ahold Delhaize, they're pretty much doing it all themselves with the ware rooms, warehouses. They bought Fresh Direct. So, you know, they're 100% committed to doing it themselves. Others, though, you know, it's hard, so it might be easier to outsource. But in either case, you have to offer it. Another thing that's really happening in the delivery space and also the pickup space is automation. So a lot of the retailers are investing into automated warehouses using technologies like AutoStore or Ocado. Like what I think is amazing is Kroger's actually entering markets that they don't even have retail stores in. So they've entered Florida with no retail stores, and they're competing against Publix, Walmart, others. Wow. So that's a huge move. So they're building these automated warehouses, and they're just going 100% e-commerce. So I think, and that the challenge with automation is that if you invest too much money and make it too big, then in order to fill the box basically with sales, you have to go further and further away from the warehouse to get more and more zip codes and more customers to fill that box. But then what happens is it makes it harder to do same day delivery because now you're driving a really long distance. So there's this really sort of interesting formula that you have to crack that's size of warehouse, distance to the customer, amount that you've invested in, into that facility in order to pay it back. So I think that's just, you know, a really, really interesting kind of way to look at the business. If you just look at it from a logistics point of view and the service model to the customer. So,
yeah. I mean, even if you look at the old way of doing Peapod on top of the Stop and Shops, there's the version of it today that uses automation would be the micro fulfillment center technologies that they're using that extra grocery space in the actual stores, whether it's above like you were doing, or they'll tack it onto the side or whatnot. And there's another question that some of that automation technology brings, which is the assortment design. You know, do you use that assortment space and the automation and the robotics of the micro fulfillment centers to better service instant commerce? You know, so rather than so you just have the same kind of products, but you avoid the picking costs, or do you use it to have a larger assortment for people who do the buy online pick up in store? So you've got greater SKUs, but maybe that sell at a lower volume. I think you're right. I think there's a lot of questions that this type of stuff raises. One thing go ahead.
Yeah. So like the challenge also, great thing about what you just brought up is assortment. Actually, automation limits your assortment. So you can only get a certain number of products, say like 10,000. So if the customer wants sort of the long tail, you're still running around the store picking up the spices and things like that. So I think there is a model, and you just touched on it, which is super fast automation for the highest moving SKUs that are most popular. And you just don't even offer, you know, the long tail. So that, and then don't forget frozen. Frozen's hard to put into automation. I'm so glad I'm not doing it anymore.
I'll put that in the intro, Thomas. No.
One of the things that Peapod got right really early on that I think is incredible is the customer experience on the website was, I would venture to say that in 2010, the average product detail page on Peapod is better than the average product detail page on most grocers today. Had better imagery, had better item details, had better nutritional information. And the same information provided a great search experience. And then also you were running a media program on peapod.com as well, all driven by really great content. So Peapod seems to me like it was early in prioritizing the digital experience and the digital brand, and continued to lead in that space over a very long period of time, even in the face of competition that was differentiating on other axes. What about that digital experience? You know, what about it caused you to prioritize it so highly and focus on it so much? And how much of an advantage really was that, and is that even today?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, so the company motto tagline from the very beginning was smart shopping for busy people. And so the smart shopping was a driving force that we wanted to make it so that the customer could find the products in the smartest way as possible. And so what does that mean? That means content. That means features that leverage the content. And then also, you're right, the media was also very, right from the start of Peapod, like selling ads to CPG companies, coupons. We invented electronic coupons. So yeah, those are all really, really critical. And then, you know, actually, I just want to show you one thing. So this is 1995. So when the first nutrition labels came out, we said, we got to offer these online. And we were just moving to a Windows interface from MS-DOS. So we started, these labels came out on the products. We started typing them in. And then I found a company that had shelf images, you know, for planogram systems. And I licensed those images. And this was what we offered in 1995. So, I mean, we were definitely always focused on, you know, offering the best products to the best product data, content, and the features around that. And then, you know, as we
Thomas, you'll have to send us that image so we can share it with our listeners, because it's a beautiful relic from an MS-DOS era.
Well, so I will say any millennials and zillennials will not recognize the windowing style, the old Microsoft gray. And
hey, what about the Warhol reference? Come on.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, man. Top of the game, mister.
That's why I did it. That was our first image, our first product. I said, it's got to be Campbell C. That's all.
Oh, that's awesome.
But that we were manually typing that in for every product that we were offering. And also from day one, we had things like, unit price and then sorting by unit price. So you could find the cheapest per ounce. I mean, these were things that we were like the first to invent. And it was just driven by the smart shopping. You know, we just wanted to make it as easy as possible for the customer to find the best value and then what's good for them health-wise, which is, you know, always been for my brother and me, Andrew, my brother Andrew and I, always been a big thing is health, food. You know, and health.
And Thomas, you know, so we've sort of covered the past, present, and then I want to talk about sort of present and future, which is what you were hinting at earlier, which is your next adventure. You know, throughout your career, you've really been at the forefront of the fight for transparency of nutritional and sustainability information in grocery. You know, you want to make healthy eating accessible for everyone. And so you've started a new company, Sifter SP, and that's looking to make a leap forward and be able to achieve that future, really. So can you tell us a bit about that? And what caused you to put your energy into it?
There's actually a company that we started inside of Peapod and then spun it out. So it was called Item Master. And the reason we started that is because up to that point, we had been paying for all that data and all the images. And I just kept wondering, it's like, why are we paying for that? And why aren't the CPG companies, the owners of the content, paying for that? So we came up with this idea to create a platform where the CPGs could upload their own content, you know, their images and their data. And so we built this platform. But we couldn't get any of the CPG companies to do it because they didn't have the departments and the people to do it. So that's when at Item Master, we actually started capturing all the images and data ourselves with machines and all that. Frankly, I wanted to start the company that what Salsify is today. We were just a little early, but So Item Master, though, we were really focused on embracing the GS1 standards. And so GS1 had, their standards had all six views of the image straight on, and then three sort of advertising views at a different plunge angle and a different side angle. And so we made that our standard capture. And I think that caught a lot of people off guard because it was like, whoa, they're offering everything. And so we were charging the manufacturer, the CPGs, to capture it. And then we were actually giving it away free to the retailer. And of course, we were part of Ahold at the time, Ahold Delhaize. And so they were kind of pretty good leverage to get everyone to play ball with us. So we started Item Master. We became experts at data capture. So now I'm expert at e-commerce, expert at data capture of products, which includes all the nutrition data. And so what that does is we went, well, now that we've left Peapod, we sold Item Master, what do we want to do next? And it was like, man, we've been wanting to do something to make healthy eating easy for everybody. And so we started Sifter, and its whole focus is we've built a nutrition as a service platform in order to enable retailers, health companies, consumers all access nutrition as a service and shop by diet. And so the process now is that we bring in the raw data. So Salsify is one of our key providers of bringing in the raw data that the consumer product goods have contributed. So their images, package data, all the nutrition and ingredients. We then make sure it's all complete, beautifully clean, goes through our QA process to make sure it's a complete record. And then we run it through all our algorithms that assign all the different diet filters or attributes to the product. So we have more than 100, now we're at about 135 different ones. So those are not claims on the package. Those are ones that we are able to imply based on the ingredients, the nutrition panel. So if you have gout, we can tell you this product's not good for gout. If you have diabetes, we can tell you you can't eat this product, or we can tell you that you can eat this product, all based on analyzing through our algorithms, all the ingredients of the product. So then we publish that into the cloud and make that available to retailers as a platform. So a nutrition as a service platform. So that's sort of what Sifter does. And you can go to sifter.shop as a consumer for free and shop by diet, enter, and there's no single diet. So like I'm personally a diabetic. And so my diet is diabetes. I'm also gluten-free and I'm also dairy-free. So my diet is really unique to me, combining three of Sifter's diets. So there's no single diet for everyone. You create your own diet and then you shop on Sifter and it sifts out the products that you can't eat. And that's really the mission of ours. Food is medicine.
And Thomas, are you imagining that there will be other ways for consumers to reach that data in the context of a retailer specifically or something like that? I think you have an announced Walmart partnership. Can you describe sort of how that's coming to life?
Sure. Well, we Walmart has something called Wellness Days, where it's a single day where they make their customers aware, they have a booth, et cetera. So what we did, we built a mobile app for them that is scanned by diet. So that diet that I set up, which was diabetes, gluten-free, dairy-free, I set that up and then I can scan any product in the store and it'll give me a green check mark or a red X. It was a really, really simple app. So that was just one project that we did for them. It was great. And now also you can access that functionality on the Sifter app right now, or you can access it through our APIs. So, you know, and in the end, we're as a nutrition as a service platform, our APIs are sort of critical and as a way to connect to our functionality.
Yeah. So when I look at Sifter.shop, you know, at the top, it's got a shop all retailers, and then it's got Thrive, Walmart, Amazon, Instacart, Target, Walgreens, and then local retailers. And I was wondering for the consumer coming there, what does that experience become? That then turns that diet into commerce.
Sure.
If that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So at Sifter, what we want to do is first help you discover the products that meet your diet. Then we want you to know where you can buy it. So, and once you know, you can choose enter your zip code, choose the retailers that you're of your choice that you shop at. And then when you want to buy the product, if we're able to connect through e-commerce, like with Walmart, we're connected through their e-commerce APIs. So we put the product right into their cart. So depending on the sophistication of the retailer, we can just direct them to the item detail of the retailer, or we can actually put it into their cart. But the whole idea here is find the products that are good for you and then tell you where you can buy them and enable you to buy them at the retailer of your choice. So we're ingesting the assortment of all the different retailers. So that's a huge big data task that we do, because if you enter a zip code, you can choose what local Walmart near you, and we have the assortment for you. So, yeah.
That's so cool. It makes me think about this big goal that the whole industry has in general, which is more personalized shopping experience. You know, personalization sells, higher conversion rate, higher margins, all that type of stuff. But there's always a tension between personalization and data privacy. And when a company tries too hard to say, hey, this is a great product for you, people get creeped out and regulators get creeped out and they push back. What's so interesting about this model is by using nutritional diets as a way in, you allow people to personalize to a really crazy degree. So zip code plus the intersection of all your dietary preferences gives you, boom, the products that might be interesting to you. That's a really, really cool insight. I can imagine shopping at myself, no problem. And then within that, I would imagine that advertisers like the retail media could sell higher priced advertising. So if somebody goes in there and they click diabetic, gluten-free, no dairy, all of a sudden, you know a tremendous amount about that person, even if you have no other points of data. You should be able to promote certain types of products to somebody who's got that type of lifestyle. And given that there's all these different diets that you could intersect within each other, you're creating all of a sudden segmented populations that people opt into based on what they're looking for. I don't know. I'm riffing on this a little bit, but yeah, I love the way that you've gone about building this.
Well, I think, and you've also touched upon something that I think is really interesting. And, you know, we all see sponsored products. If you're on Amazon, you see paid for positions. And in the grocery, if you go on a lot of grocers, you'll do a search, say for peanut butter, and then you'll see one that says sponsored product. And you go, oh, okay, so they must have paid for that position. But those sponsored products don't know about your diet. Okay, so what we're giving grocers the ability, retailers to do, is do sponsored products and only show the ones that match the diet that the person is on. And so now, you know, that's just a whole new area of personalization, I think, just like what you said. And I think it also, guess what happens when you are only showing the sponsored products that match your diet? Usually those are higher margin items. Okay. They're healthier. They're the newer products. Mm-hmm. Retailers make more money. I think the personalization, it is hyper personalization beyond anything that's happened before.
In a way, without like creepy data collection or privacy issues or anything like that. I mean, you're giving an experience that people opt into. Yeah.
This is just real time. Like this is what I can change it right now. You know what? I'm going to do my daughter's diet right now because she's completely different than my diet. And so the sponsored products will just be different or whatever personalization. It's the real time. It's not based on past history.
Yeah. And our most recent consumer research, it turned out that, you know, now in the 55% range of consumers are willing to pay more for brands they trust. And the issues of nutrition and sustainability and ingredients are core to that when you're shopping for food. And a future where somebody was able to stop offering me products that wouldn't work for my diet would be in some ways the ultimate experience, where I'm seeing things that it could drive great discovery. You know, my husband is dairy allergic as well. And so often we get this close to like loving a product and then we realize, oh, there's something in there. Yeah. And so I feel like if that were removed from our view and instead we were being offered the things that would work for our family, that I think that adds tremendous value and loyalty. And in these days where it is, you know, margin pressure and competition coming from all over the digital universe, that's a really cool edge to work on. Are there ways that our brand listener executives are getting kind of their engine going on this? Are there ways in which you work with brands through Sifter?
Well, so the first thing is that you'll notice on sifter.shop, there's no prices. Okay, mm-hmm. So we're all about finding products, irregardless of the price. We don't want to be a shopping engine that compares retailers. We're all about the CPG product and you know, and what's inside it and what does it offer the consumer? So I think that's kind of and people said, well, why don't you have pricing? It's well, because that's not what Sifter's about. Sifter's about finding products and for you to discover products that match your diet, your unique diet. And then you can choose your retailer. But I think I don't think we really ever want to show pricing. We'll leave that up to the retailer. If they're connecting into our APIs, they get the data, they can render it however they want on the screen. And, you know, if they want to do it with price, which if they're in their e-commerce, they're going to show price. But we do not want to get into that at all. We just want to stay focused on, you know, shop by diet is the key for us.
Well, Thomas, one, thank you for being here just to take us on that journey through, you know, you've seen this industry, you've helped start this industry, you know, putting the E in front of things for your entire career. And to see you now doing it with Sifter, it's so exciting. And we really appreciate you sharing that journey and what's to come with us. It's
been a great time. Thank you. And, you know, I've been working with Rob for how long has it been? Like probably 10 years now, Rob.
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, and I keep popping in and out of Rob's life, you know, whatever new company. But I will take credit for enlightening Rob on consumer product goods, food products, because we were...
Yes.
I was the one that, like, I came to you with Itemaster, and I wanted to use your platform because I was tired of building all the software myself. And then I said, sure, you can load all our product data. It's free for everybody. So you then loaded it into Salsify, and, you know, it was like great demo.
Yeah, it was a great demo.
Yeah. God bless you, Thomas.
I mean, it took us, I don't know, almost 8 years after that fact too, before we were really actually managing the nutritional data in a sane way. I mean, you were at the very cutting edge of anything that we were able to do. So I always appreciate that.
Well, you know, it's always like waiting for dev to get things done, right? That's okay. What I do now. I'm the product manager, right? I don't like.
Just sit and wait. Yeah. When it comes out, it's great. And Sifter is a great site, and congratulations on it. And as it evolves and new things get added, come back and chat with us anytime. Thanks again to Thomas for joining us. If you want to see his very first digital shopping image, check out the DSI LinkedIn page or go to the show notes. To keep on top of all things DSI, go to digitalshelfinstitute.org and sign up as a member. And thanks for being part of our community.